I'm Jamie, a.k.a. Scumboy, from the Operation Pug Podcast, a proud member of the Gunna Geek Network, just like the show you're listening to now. The opinions expressed are those of each individual host. Check out all the podcasts at GunnaGeekNetwork.com and get ready, because geekiness begins in 3, 2, 1.
You are listening to the Starling Tribune, a podcast dedicated to the Arrow TV show.
This guy gets more airtime than the Kardashians, right?
This podcast is not produced or maintained by the CW, Warner Brothers Television, CTV, or DC Comics. All characters, situations, and stories are the properties of Time Warner. I am the Oracle, and this is your Tribune.
Welcome back to Earth 2's favorite newspaper, the Starling Tribune. I am the chief editor this week. My name is Stargate Pioneer, but everybody calls me SP. And your reporters for this special episode number 161 of the Starling Tribune are Chris.
Just admit it. My brain saved the day.
No, I will never, ever admit that, Chris. And Michelle!
You all look like you're going to a Renaissance fair.
What do you got against a Renaissance fair, Michelle?
Well, they're dusty. The one I went to was dusty, and you had to wait 30 minutes to get a turkey leg, and it just wasn't pleasant.
If I want a turkey leg, I want it now. I don't want to wait 30 minutes for you, so I'll give you that there. Hey, everyone, this podcast is recorded on Sunday, July 16th, 2017, live from the Starling Tribune headquarters studios and broadcast worldwide on www.geeks.live. Remember, our newspaper is full of spoilers, facts, and speculations about Arrow and the rest of the DC TV, movie, and comic universe.
So everyone, today we'll be discussing Legends of Tomorrow, as well as news, interviews, articles, and announcements that have dropped in the last week that could impact future episodes of Arrow, as well as The Flash, Supergirl, Legends of Tomorrow, Vixen, and Constantine. It will not impact things like Lois and Clark, The New Adventures of Superman, Justice League Unlimited, Batman Beyond, or Teen Titans.
I see what you did there.
Little twist.
If you're new to the show, thank you for searching us out on the internet and joining us. If you like our content, why don't you swing by our podcast network home at GunnaGeek.com, where you can find all of our past shows, plus a ton of other geeky videos, podcasts, and articles, all under the Gunna Geek Productions banner.
All right, guys, I guess it's time to get down into it. Michelle, why don't you go ahead and break down this week's episode for us?
Sure. This week's episode is Camelot 3000. It's season 2, episode 12. It originally aired Tuesday, February 21st, 2017. Director, Antonio Negrete. Credits include 2 Legends, 3 Arrow, 1 Flash, 2 of the 100, and 1 Forever. The writer was Anderson McKenzie. Credits include 3 Legends, 1 Forever, and 1 The Tomorrow People.
Looks like an all CW production crew this week. Woohoo! Yay, CW. So looking at the ratings for when this episode came out in the week of February 21st, on Monday, February 20th, Supergirl aired the Mr. and Mrs. McPlitzik episode, which was, I believe, a Valentine's Day sort of episode. It had a live rating of 2.24 with a live plus DVR of 3.54. On Tuesday, The Flash aired the 13th episode of their season with a live rating of 2.78, which is a little low for Flash, but the Live Plus DVR bumped it up to 4.75, and it was the attack on Gorilla City. And I remember there was a large speedster team up for that one too, which was really cool. On Wednesday, the 22nd of February, Arrow aired The Sin Eater to a live rating of 1.54 and a live plus DVR of 2.46, which isn't bad, but the live rating really hurts. And on Tuesday, of course, the 21st of February, Legends of Tomorrow aired to a live rating, which beat out Arrow on Wednesday with 1.64 and a live plus DVR rating, which also beat out Arrow at 2.70. So all of a sudden, Legends of Tomorrow is climbing up that ratings chain for the CW with Camelot / 3000. So moving on into Camelot/3000, what are the plots, the themes? What's the big things about the characters? Let's start with the overall theme. Michelle, what do you got for us?
Well, they went to the year 3000 to find a piece of the spear from Dr. Midnight. And then they went to Camelot to find a piece of the spear with Stargirl.
This was not their most creative show title, that's for sure, this week.
Okay, so the 3000, especially with the Detroit 3000, that reminded me, I don't know how, but it reminded me of RoboCop and the Sucks 6000. I don't know why, but I guess it was Detroit and 3000. Michelle, have you ever watched the RoboCop, the original RoboCop?
Yes.
You remember the Sucks 6000?
Yeah, vaguely. I'm going to admit I haven't watched it in a while, but I believe I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, so I got a question for everybody. Sucks 6000 versus the Wave Runner. Michelle, which one wins?
The Wave Runner.
Are you sure? You sure it gets better gas mileage?
Well, I think the Wave Rider would always win, so.
I don't know that it uses gas.
Yeah, it would use whatever quantum dark star thingy.
Nuclear fission device from the year 6000 AD.
It could be worse for the universe than gasoline is to our environment. You know, like we have big, huge ice shelves that are just breaking off of Antarctica. They could have whole portions of galaxies just break off from the universe and go into, I don't know what.
Okay, look. The Time Masters were jerks, but I don't think they were such big jerks to like ruin the universe ecosystem that way.
Maybe. Who knows? I mean, they were kind of dicks.
It's true. And I was surprised in this episode where Rip Hunter went into the future to talk to Dr. Midnight. And Dr. Midnight reminded him of the Time Masters and they suck. And I wanted Rip to say, well, they don't exist anymore. But he didn't. So I wonder if the Time Masters are still around.
Maybe in some weird shape or form. I mean, there could be some remnant ones that are still floating around.
Could be. Well, the reason why we're going to all these places is that Rip is trying to find the spear. And there are two portions of the spear that are left out there. And I did not catch on that the entire leftover of the Justice League of America's team had portions of the spear scattered throughout time. And this episode reminded me of that because I had forgotten.
So we learned that there was a final mission for the JSA, and it happened in 1956. We learned from Stargirl that Rip comes along and is like, we have to take this spear, we have to protect reality. And they end up breaking it, and then he gets part of it, and then Stargirl and Dr. Midnight get part of it. It was a clever way to hide it and to make sure it never come into contact, you know, 3000 AD and 507.
Was it 507 or was it 570 AD?
507 AD.
I thought it was 507, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, I thought it was 570. I guess I was dyslexic on the treadmill as I was watching it. I was also having problems, by the way, watching this, because my second PS3 went down. So all of a sudden I started troubleshooting because I didn't think it was the PS3's, although it still could be, because I went to my old first generation Fire Stick and I was able to watch it through Netflix that way. So I don't know. We'll see what the trouble is. And I will report next time on what kind of troubleshooting that I have partaken. In the meantime, what we talk about is not troubleshooting electronic gadgets on this show. We talk about fight scenes and stunts. So we actually had a few reasonable fight scenes this episode, didn't we, Michelle?
Well, we had the short sword fight between Arthur and Dark, but the action really starts when Dark cons his way into, because of the future techie thing, and you know, he's got Stargirl, and then Sarah's like, oh, look, there's a knife, and she gets the knife, and, you know, a fight breaks out. Because that's one of the things about Sarah. She does stuff, and then fights break out.
Everywhere. In bars, in Camelot, pretty much anywhere you take her, there's going to be a fight.
Since there's a lot of mead available in Camelot, do you think, or ale, or whatever, some sort of alcoholic beverage, can we call this a bar fight?
It happens in the room with the round table where all the knights come. It's, according to Ray, it's this place of reverence and awe and stature. So I don't know if he would appreciate us calling it a bar.
Probably not.
See, I'm thinking in terms of like the Vikings' main hall. They, you know, that's pretty much a bar.
Ah, but this is Britannia and Camelot.
It's just a legend. It's not real.
Okay, so, and this is also, we might touch upon it later, I guess. So you want to talk about the time issues here and that it's not time accurate, or do we just want to...
Yeah, the fact that they broke the timeline.
Well, Stargirl technically breaks it. Okay, so this is what's weird. So Stargirl gets sent back to this time period, and somehow it's almost like, I guess she molds or almost wills King Arthur into like the, because Nate says this shouldn't exist, but it exists. So did Stargirl just find like a village or something? Because she's Merlin, and then groom certain people to build Camelot and to populate Camelot, and therefore her creating the legendary place influences the surrounding area, and then the legend comes down for Ray to read it, and then because he read it, then he goes back, he helps strengthen the legend. Oh, my head.
So you're saying that Stargirl fanficted Camelot into existence?
Right.
More or less.
If there wasn't the Spear of Destiny, then she wouldn't have gone back, and then she wouldn't have had Camelot happen. And then, so I guess all that is has happened before?
And I think she's lost a lot of her Justice League of America skills because, you know, she was... taken hostage by King Arthur, and she refused to do anything about it. She could have done the whole kick the guy in the foot and get the knife away from him.
But she lurves him, SP.
Lurves. Is that what it's called now? Lurves?
That was just... Why? Why? You love him, don't you? Why? Just let it be. You don't have to make two people fall in love. They can just be friends.
But it's the CW. Of course you have to have that happen.
Okay, point taken.
Well, I think Guinevere and Arthur, a marriage based when friends, it's kind of weird. Like, I don't know. I know it's kind of like kind of schoolgirl sort of crush sort of deal, but hey, it happened.
We don't have arranged marriages anymore, but I tend to think that this sort of thing actually still happens in modern day. For whatever reason, if it's for a green card, because it still does happen, for a green card or for some family fortunes to stay around or whatever, it happens. So I'm not going to discount it. We like to idealize marriage and say it's for two people that are in love, but it doesn't happen all the time. So this could have been one of those occasions where you had King Arthur and Guinevere just getting together because Stargirl fanficked it.
Yeah, possibly. But I do like this version of Guinevere. She's just not some lady in a fancy dress sitting on a throne. She's suiting up and leading the charge and da-da-da-da. I like her. So does Sarah.
Right. So Guinevere was played by Elise Levesque. I probably butchered her last name. Levesque, maybe. And if you look at her IMDb... she has quite the past, including a stint on Stargate SGU Universe as Chloe Armstrong.
Oh, that's who that was. Huh.
But she has appeared in Smallville, in Flash Gordon. She's appeared in a lot of stuff. Her IMDb actually goes back to 1997, and she has a total of 41 acting credits. And she was Detective Maddie Enger for you Orphan Black fans as well. So she has definitely been around.
Yes. Oh, my God. That is right. Oh, my gosh. She is so vicious on Orphan Black. It's so weird to see her Oh, wow. Yeah, that's how good she is. Made me forget.
And if you happen to be a Cedar Cove fan, she was Mary Ellen Sherman there as well. So, yeah, she's been in a lot of important things in the last 20 or so years. So, good on Legends of Tomorrow for casting Guinevere how they did. So, we have Stargirl being kept hostage. We have the sword fight between Arthur and Dark. But we also had kind of a mass battlefield sort of fight, didn't we? Chris, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, it was pretty cool to see. It's one of those things you don't anticipate you're going to see this massive battle of two armies. I mean, granted, it's no Two Towers Lord of the Rings level fight, but it sure is damn fun to see them swinging broadswords around, blocking with shields, Rey swooping in with his lightsaber that we can't call a lightsaber throughout the show. It was fun.
It's trademark, man.
Yeah, it was a good fight. Horses and mud. And I know what's really weird is I know this aired before Wonder Woman came out, but Rey does that shield maneuver that we see in Wonder Woman. I'm like, my head was going, shield. So that was interesting.
It was. That was one of the great parts about Wonder Woman. And I wonder which filmed first. Because I would have to think that Wonder Woman filmed it first and that it was reused in Legends of Tomorrow just by the production schedule for the movie.
Well, I mean, it might have filmed first, but I doubt they had any idea what Legends was going to do or vice versa. I doubt there's much crossover between the staff on the movie and the show.
For the stunt people?
Yeah.
All right.
TV is a completely different world than movies in a lot of these cases.
Well, it looked good anyway. So that's the fights. That's the time periods that we're in. So let's move on to the characters. Let's start with the captain of the Wave Rider. And we're not talking about Rip Hunter. We will never talk about Rip Hunter as the captain of the Wave Rider again. Let's talk about Captain Lance.
You mean Lance a lot?
Works for me.
It's interesting because Vixen was upset. Let's use the word upset at Sarah because she is like, you know, you could have taken Rip. Because in the last episode, Jackson could have shot him in the leg and they could have brought him aboard the Wave Rider, but instead they've let him go and Vixen's upset about that. And Vixen is that whole tactics, the mission before anything else. And Sarah's like, no, let's do team before tactics. So it's interesting to watch their leadership styles clash in this episode.
Indeed. Would you call a Vixen a leader?
Not per se. It's not like she's the team leader of either the JSA or the Legends, but I think she might have some experience from her JSA days in leading like squads, for lack of a better term, when they break the team up into separate groups and things like that.
Hmm. Hadn't thought about that. Leading teams of lesser capable individuals. I think Sarah did an okay job. She's got a lot working against her. I think her desire to save Rip is way up there because a lot of people idolize Rip and she definitely idolizes Rip. Learned everything about leading a team from him. And I think that desire is going to hurt them next episode. We've already seen it. But when the first time you watch this and you see Rip in the holding cell at the end, you're like, of course, he knows the ship in and out. Something's going to happen. He's, you know, he's not going to stay in that cell forever. So you just knew that it wasn't going to be good. I thought she was going to knock him out the first time I saw it and put him in the med bay and find out what's wrong with his head. She didn't. She just stuck him in the brig.
Yeah.
I don't know if they had time to start doing medical evaluations on Rip at that point. It was, we need to move on.
Yeah. There were two moments where Sarah kind of lost her way this episode. One was when, like, she tried to be stern and leave because they get the part of the spear and they're ready to leave. But then Rey is all geeking out and wanting to fight what's right. And she's thinking about still leaving. And then Vixen was like, no, follow your gut. And then Sarah just locking Rip up in there. And even before that final moment happens, I'm like going, Sarah, what are you thinking? Like, he can say things. Gideon is voice activated. Why isn't he gagged?
Or you signs Gideon's voice commands, one of the two.
No, because You know, there was that one episode where he's playing cat and mouse with Jax, and he's like, I know every single inch of this ship. And I would imagine he would know every single piece of programming.
Unless you could basically be like, Gideon, you don't take any commands out of the brig or something like that. But even then, Captain Hunter's authority is probably hard-coded into Gideon, for lack of a better term.
Yeah, so we'll leave that discussion for next time. But I just, at the time, as I saw this the first time, I thought that was a mistake. And as it turns out, it probably is. So,
oh, yeah, they should have straight up knocked him out as soon as they had him on the ship. There's sedatives at the very least.
So with that, we didn't really have a chance to rate Sarah as a captain last time because, quite frankly, we all forgot about it. But we're going to bring that back. We're going to rate Sarah Lance on a scale 1 to 10. And Chris, we're going to start with you.
She had some tactical lapses and kind of flip-flopped on her opinion at one point. I'll give it a 6.5.
All right. Michelle, what do you think?
I pretty much agree with Chris. She should have known that they're going to go after Ray no matter what. A 6.
6 and 6.5. I will go 7 just because she rocked her outfit so well.
Fair enough. I mean, but she should have known based off of how much Ray was loving this time in Camelot back in this time that he's not going to listen. So she should have dragged his happy butt back on the ship instead of being like, okay, Steele's got this. No problem. No, you're the captain. He's going to listen to you. And if he doesn't, you're also a badass former assassin. You can just knock his dumbass out and carry him back to the ship.
Right. And also, it was kind of weak what happened inside the command area. I don't even know what to call it because it's not like a bridge or a cockpit or anything. It's kind of an open great room area where the control stick that has two directional controls on it is. But I felt that was weak as well. The mutiny against her, she could have handled that better as well. But
well, that's a common trait on this show is people mutiny against the captain. Look how much it happened to Rip in season 1. We don't like what you said. Rah, 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 rah. I mean,
but he deserved it.
Sometimes.
Yeah, there were times where he did deserve it.
There was a lot of times where he did deserve it. All right. So if you can think of anything about rating Sarah Lance as we go ahead and bring it up. But we're going to move on to Sir Raymond of the Palms. Michelle, what about Sir Raymond?
Oh, my gosh. I thought Ray geeking out with George Lucas was just, I thought he can't geek out any more than that. Oh, no, I was wrong, because I guess 12-year-old Ray read all the King Arthur stuff, and this was like uber geeking out. He was like the knights, and he knew all the people, and he's like, that's the chair of the what, and here's the sword of the yadda yadda, and he's talking in like the dialect, oh, prithee this or and such. I mean, it was just like, wow.
And here's where the time travel goes wrong, because we're in the wrong era. First of all, there shouldn't be any jousting. Camelot shouldn't exist. But then he's brought up the fact that he's going to die because Nate finds it in a historical book that Sir Raymond of the Palms dies in this battle. And then Ray changes his future by putting on his suit underneath the armor. How much more of this time dilation are we going to have to endure before the universe breaks?
Don't forget, he makes a freaking lightsaber too. A timeline be damned. He makes a lightsaber and takes it in the battle.
And his Iron Man hands too, right?
Yeah.
So this is not good. Is this all in the auspices of magic and Merlin?
Yeah, I mean, that they can write it off that way, you know, Ray of the Palms, knight gallant, heir or follower of Galahad, you know, worthy like that or something. But, you know, that picture goes back to the first episode of the season, because isn't that how Nate finds him or something in one of those books? Or no, am I wrong about that?
I was trying to think of that too. I think you're barking up the right tree, because it was something to do with the dinosaur era that they found him, and they found a heat wave right in the medieval times. Chris, help me out.
They found him in the ship. It was crashed in the ocean. Heat wave.
Yeah, they found Firestorm.
Firestorm were, yeah, they were both there as jesters.
Right.
But that was in the medieval times, right?
Yes, some medieval period. I'm not sure if it was the same as this one or not. I don't know.
If this is true, if Ray Palmer ends up in the historical annals for Camelot, he would have read about himself when he was 12 years old.
If Camelot actually existed, he'd have read about Camelot actually existing in that capacity also, versus a fictionalized version of events.
Well, no, hold on. Yeah, so I guess it's kind of weird. Like, which Camelot is this? Is this the Camelot, oh gosh, that existed way before, and that's what Stargirl and them read, and then when she goes back, she recreates her version of Camelot, or is this the actual Camelot? Oh, my brain really hurts now.
I know. This is the whole thing. I don't know if this is the real... I have no idea. I started thinking about this, and I know every week we run into this and our brains hurt, but it's getting to the point where they're breaking the fabric of reality just by time hopping back and forth. And I know how this season ends, and I know what we're up against, but there's stuff that happens along the way that I don't know if it's actually happening. Like, is this all going to be reverted at some point in time? I have no idea. I don't know what's real and what's not. So it's hard to watch this at any other level than just, oh, it's a popcorn. Hey, we're in Camelot, and just run with it and just enjoy the kiss at the end of the episode.
Well, I mean, that's how I look at it with the show. And I don't mean this to sound disparaging if it does, but Legends Tomorrow is a show where I can flip off my brain and just have fun because, like you were saying, if you try and think too hard about how their time travel efforts work and how this could impact the timeline and screw everything up, then you get a headache and you don't enjoy it as much. And I don't want to have that experience anymore. I did that at some points early on, and I was like, nope, I know what this is now. This is, we're going to play with the theory of time travel, we're going to have fun with it, but we're going to twist it to do whatever we need for the purposes of the plot.
I guess it just hit me kind of hard this week. Sorry to revisit the subject, but you're absolutely right.
I think we've all been there at some points on this show, and that's just how I got to my current, I don't know if this is the best way to put it, apathy towards the time travel mechanic. I just accept it for what it is.
You have to turn off your brain on it, because if you think too hard, it's going to break. Absolutely. And also, Michelle, I smell a thief.
Oh, that was awesome. Stein is playing fast and loose this season. First, he has a time aberration of a daughter, and then he steals future tech from Dr. Midnight. And I love that scene. Roy is just like, oh, what did you do? What did you do?
What did you do?
Yeah, it was really fun. And apparently he can sniff out other thieves, which I guess is a play on words, but I don't think thieves actually smell. Maybe they do. Maybe there's a pheromone thing that happens. I don't know.
Hey, they know their own kind. That's how I look at it.
Fair enough. Are they going to start peeing on fire hydrants to mark their territory?
Maybe they have to steal one first.
You know, if you steal a fire hydrant, there's going to be a rush of water coming from the ground.
Well, that sounds like a problem for whoever's left behind.
Yeah, but Martin stealing the future tech, I didn't have such a big issue with that because they're in a time ship with futuristic technology already.
But not that futuristic, evidently. They don't have mind control toys.
But he has to steal it, or otherwise they can't defeat Rip.
Because plot!
Yeah, fair enough. Thank you, Neil, for saving us there. So it was interesting, and we've talked about this, and I've been waiting for this episode because we've been talking about this all season long about Mick Rory's brain, and his intelligent quotient is probably higher, or just intellectual will is higher than we all have been giving him credit for. And this is the pinnacle of that in this episode, kind of a downhill spiral from here. But this is where he gets to say he's the big brain. He's able to control everybody's minds and, quite frankly, knock out an entire network of mind control. That is pretty rad for Mick. I was glad to see that progression up till this episode. But then there's a turn.
Mick will never be the smartest guy in the room, but it's willpower. That's what he's got. And think about it. He used Kronos for how long and then eventually broke that programming? Willpower, man.
Okay, I'll go with that. The whole willpower thing, because I know what happens next, and willpower is a big part of what eventually happens there as well. All right. So, Michelle, is there anybody else you want to talk about before we move on?
Oh, we have to talk about Dark as the Dark Knight.
How appropriate, right?
Who doesn't do rescues?
I don't do rescues.
And apparently brings a gun to a sword fight.
He'll do whatever it takes to win. He's a League of Assassins exile. They'll do whatever.
Apparently he doesn't check to see if who he shot is dead or not either. I think that would might be important when you're facing an adversary.
Well, he just wants to get away.
He's got the spear. He's good.
Talking about the spear. All right. We have to talk about Vixen. She's super up and just pulls that Excalibur out of that rock. How cool is that, Chris?
Yeah, it was kind of badass.
Now she's Queen of Camelot.
Yeah. It was a nice way to hide that piece of the spear, though, and kind of go back to Stargirl. It's safe, trust me. Well, yeah, because not many people are going to be able to pull that sword from the stone.
Let's talk about the mechanics of the pulling the sword out of the rock for a second. So if the spear is on the tip of the sword and easily pops off once it's out, don't you think it would kind of stay in the rock as the rest of the sword is pulled out?
Because plot.
No, now she's still strong when she has the sword. So whatever animal she channeled, she's still channeling it when she yanks off the tip.
So she's even stronger than pulling out the sword from the rock to take the spear off the sword. Because you'd have to be more strong in order to do that. Otherwise, the tip would have popped off, right?
Sure.
Maybe.
No, I'm pretty sure I know what I'm talking about here. So if she's pulling Excalibur out of the rock and she's doing it with a certain strength, and if it was any less strength to pop the spear off of the tip of Excalibur, then she wouldn't have been able to pull it off.
Well, no, it's direction of force. When she pulls out, she's actually just pulling out there. Because when she had to take off the tip, she had to break the binding. So the binding is made, it's okay to pull it out, but then you need a different direction of a force to break off the tip.
Are we talking about the same force that powers the lightsaber? You know what I did there? Yeah.
Anyway.
Anyone else you need to talk about, Chris?
I think I'm good.
Michelle?
I'm good.
I am also good. So that is it for this week's discussion of Camelot / 3000. We will continue our rewatch next time of Legends of Tomorrow with another episode, aren't we, Michelle?
Yes. Next episode is Land of the Lost, Season 2, Episode 13. It originally aired Tuesday, March 7th, 2017. The legends are left 70 million years in the past when Rip causes the Wave Rider to crash after his capture. Director Ralph Hemmecker and writers Kato Shimizu and Ray Utarnichet.
I believe the writers are definitely CW veterans. I'm not sure about the director. I can't remember if the director's directed before. Well, we'll find out next time. Meantime, it's time to go back to the Starling Tribune newsroom. Coming to you live from the Starling Tribune main news desk is Michelle, which is going to talk about Arrow teasers.
Yes, EW.com talked to Wendy Miracle about Dinah Drake. And there's a great picture of Juliana Harkavy, who plays Dinah Drake, in the new costume. And Miracle said about Dinah suiting up, "We have an intervening 5 months between the finale and where we pick up in the premiere, and I think we will take the opportunity to tell the full story of it. But I think, yes, the island and everything that happened in the finale has driven her to this point. But at the same time, it's really the team and the sense of her being a part of something. She was adrift before, but now she's part of a family and part of this bigger force in the world."
Think she could be a stepmom?
No.
No shipping.
No shipping.
I'm allowed to ship. I could ship if I want to.
Fine. You can ship if you want to, but no, this Dinah is too, I don't know, too good for Ollie or something. I don't know, but she's just...
I can get behind that one. She is too good for Oliver, because more and more I get to learn Oliver, both in the comics and here in the show, I'm beginning to be a less and less of a fan of the guy. So I don't know. We'll see. And by the way, Anna Hopkins, who plays the baby mama, Samantha Clayton, she was awesome in Dark Matter Ambrosia, which just aired a few weeks ago. She was awesome in it. Oh, I tweeted her and said she did a good job. She said, thanks. We're good. All right, moving on to somebody that Chris will fanboy over. Manu Bennett is looking like he's going to stick around, isn't he?
That's true. Stephen Amell was at the Heroes and Villains Fan Fest in Nashville recently. He teased there that Bennett is, quote, back to being a part of the show, end quote, and he might, quote, pop up multiple times this year. He didn't offer much more information than that, so it's possible that Slade might actually be dead and Manu Bennett is appearing in some kind of convoluted flashback sequences. But either way, guys, more Deathstroke. I'm hoping that he's alive in the present day, and we get a little bit of a redemption arc and maybe the search for his son or something like that. Although I'll take flashbacks because, yeah, Deathstroke is awesome. It's the best villain we've had on Arrow, and he's one of the best characters I think we've had on Arrow, too.
I'd still like to see the plane crash, but I think we're beyond that at this point. And I agree with you, Chris. I think we're going to get the sons, especially with what's going on with Oliver right now. Looking forward to it. So, Michelle, talking about villains, we have some news about Black Siren.
Yes. So TV Line was talking to Wendy Miracle about Black Siren. And there's this whole question about, can she have a redemption arc? And Miracle said, her father is there. Oliver is there. Everyone is going to be asking whether or not it's possible to find a little piece of Laurel, the Laura Lance they knew and loved, in there somewhere. That said, I think she's interesting as a villain. Black Siren is a badass. And also in the article, bonus, even with Adrian Chase dead, Oliver's battle to conceal his secret identity is far from over. Rumor has it he will be dogged by a curious FBI agent this season.
Ooh, the feds are getting involved, finally.
Doesn't everybody just know by now that he's the Green Arrow?
No, because that eye makeup was really good he used early on, and the mask and eye makeup combination totally obscures the fact that Stephen Amell has facial features that are not covered by mask or hood.
I think Deputy Mayor Lance still has doubts on whether or not he's actually the Green Arrow. We'll see. We'll see as that moves on. Well, moving on into the rest of the DC TV news stories, we have some set photo reveals of One Flash.
So this is kind of cool, as we all know how Flash this recent season ended, with Barry willingly going into the Speed Force, leaving everything behind, and pretty much leaving his mantle with Wally. So everyone was wondering, is Wally going to keep wearing the Kid Flash costume and just call himself the Flash? Is he going to wear Barry's kind of costume? Well, these set photos show Flash actor Kean Lyndale on the set of the Flash wearing the red costume exactly like Barry's. And I got to say, it looks a little different to see him in that suit. I'm so used to seeing like his hair exposed and a little more facial features exposed with the Kid Flash costume. And damn, it does look good to see him in the red suit and to see him carrying on Barry's mantle, much like they did in the comics, where literally Wally picks up Barry's suit and continues forward in his place.
It's pretty much what we got going on here. So I haven't read any spoilers of what's going on this season. We had bets last year, so I don't want anybody to pony up to a bet right now or a prognostication, but last year we had bets on how long Flashpoint was actually going to last. So let's think about how long Barry Allen is going to be stuck in the Speed Force prison until he's let out. So let's just think about that, and we will discuss that as we get closer to the regular season. So Michelle, talking about prognostications, we actually have statistics to talk about in regards to Wonder Woman.
Yes, because this is just amazing, the staying power of Wonder Woman. The Patty Jenkins directed film Wonder Woman, starring Gal Gadot, has just taken the top spot for highest North American box office hold of any super movie, dethroning Sam Raimi's Spider-Man from 2002. Wonder Woman already has several milestones under its belt, including being the top-grossing female-directed film worldwide and Warner Brothers' third-highest-grossing film domestically, right behind Christopher Nolan's The Dark Knight and The Dark Knight Rises. And it was really cute. Ryan Reynolds congratulated Wonder Woman. He has like this Deadpool suit with a little Wonder Woman. He's made the little heart congratulating the team on the success of the movie. So
that's awesome. And Ryan actually has some ground to stand on because, well, yeah, he was Green Lantern. So he was a DC character in the past as well.
We don't talk about that anymore, SP.
I could talk about that because I enjoy the movie.
Oh,
whoa. Okay, look, I could forgive you for liking episode one of Star Wars, but man, teach his own, I guess.
Well, think of it this way. If Green Lantern is your favorite DC character, it's a decent movie, especially if you don't know anything about the true backstory.
Wait, if you're a true Green Lantern fan, then you would know the backstory?
Yeah, I kind of just went on feel for a while. And more I read about Hal Jordan and the Green Lanterns, I'm all about the Green Lanterns. They are my favorite DC character.
They totally ruined Parallax in that movie.
Okay, fine. Parallax is an evil guy. I don't care.
But like the story in the comics, the birth of Parallax and things like that was so much more powerful, where he basically causes Hal Jordan, or Hal Jordan goes crazy, calls himself Parallax and destroys all sorts of stuff and has to be put down by his fellow heroes. They got greedy with that one. It's the typical DC and Sony Pictures move that happens, is they're about to be successful and they get greedy and want to spin 6,000 different things off of it.
Yeah, that's fair enough. It was my gateway drug, so I like it. You can't take that away from me. I liked it.
I won't.
We won't.
And the comics are phenomenal. Both the Green Lanterns, the Justice League comics. I know some people have issues with that, but the Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps, the great comic runs going on right now in the DC Rebirth. And I'm just glad to be able to read them and get caught up with some things. And talking about origins, there's some deep origins of the rings that they're discussing. And I don't know if it was ever been written before or not, but it's really nice how this is all coming together for the Green Lanterns in the Rebirth universe. But congratulations to Wonder Woman. Unfortunately, Michelle, we ran a little poll over on a sister show on the GunnaGeek.com network, Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D. on the Twitter account, and the poll's not over yet. However, the poll pitted four comic book movies of 2017, the first four, Logan, Guardians of the Galaxy 2, Wonder Woman, and Spider-Man Homecoming. This poll came out a week after Spider-Man Homecoming was released. 36 votes to date. Now, Wonder Woman did not disappoint, but has not won. They only have 25% of the vote. Guardians of the Galaxy 2 currently leads with 39%. Logan is next with 19%, and then Spider-Man Homecoming at 17%. So that's just where that's where it's at. Sorry.
Money doesn't lie. No, they're all good. They're all good. But, you know, Wonder Woman is still my favorite. Guardians of the Galaxy 2 was amazing. But, you know, for sentimental reasons, Wonder Woman is going to be like, it's probably going to be my favorite movie of the year. I'm sorry to other movies, but it just pleased me on so many levels, made me happy.
See, Michelle, I thought you were going to shoot back with, well, but of course Guardians of the Galaxy 2 was winning, SP, because it's on a Marvel comic book show Twitter account, not a DC. If it was on DC, it would win. See, that's where I thought you were going to go.
Well, I actually retweeted it from the Starlight Tribune Twitter account. So there's some DC fans who are having access to it as well. But, you know, yay for Guardians.
I automatically discounted it when our friendly neighborhood Spider-Man was in a distant fourth place.
And if you want to hear all about Spider-Man Homecoming, you can listen to Chris and the Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D. gals over on Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D. episode number 188 when it comes out later. All right, talking about other podcasts on the GunnaGeek.com network. Chris, we are part of a geeky group network of podcasts, aren't we?
That's right, SP. The Starling Tribune is, in fact, part of a network of podcasts on the Gunna Geek Network, which you can find over at GunnaGeekNetwork.com. And each week, we want to highlight one specific show, kind of give you guys a little bit of a taste and be like, hey, if you like this show, maybe you should go check out this other one. I want to talk to you guys about episode 199 of the official GunnaGeek.com show entitled Justin Robert Young Interview / Indie PopCon Recap. This episode, the crew interviews the infamous Justin Robert Young, aka Jury, about his Action News Kickstarter. Gunna Geek's Michelle Ely also co-hosts to recap her experience at Indie PopCon. And you can find the GunnaGeek.com show and many other ones over at GunnaGeek.com. Tell them the Starling Tribune sent you. Because we like to send people over that way. But guys, thank you so much to everyone who did watch live and participate in the chat room over on Geeks.live. Also, a big thank you to anyone who downloads and replays either the podcast or the video version of the show. Please don't forget you can find all of that stuff over on the YouTube channel.
YouTube.com/GunnaGeek. And tell all the other listeners that they can join us live on Sundays, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern. That is our new home on www.geeks.live. And don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe. We're looking for those 5-star reviews on iTunes, which we will talk about one that we just got next show. We're really excited about that.
You can find all of our contact information on the Gunna Geek Network at GunnaGeekNetwork.com, where you can check out our forums and other shows. If you want to share your thoughts, head on over to our Facebook page, send in a tweet, or call us at 612-888-CAVE. That's 612-888-2283. Great episode, guys. That wraps it up for another week. Any last words before we sign off? At Stargate Pioneer.
Hashtag trademarked.
At the Chris Farrell.
Hashtag big brain.
And I am at Michelle Ely signing off with hashtag Sarah loves Queens. Oracle, I think we're done here.
This was the Starling Tribune. You can leave us feedback at GunnaGeek.com or check out our archive at StarlingTribune.com. Visit GunnaGeek.com for more podcasts. Music by Kevin MacLeod can be found at Incompetech.com. This podcast is not produced or maintained by the CW, Warner Brothers Television, CTV, or DC Comics. All characters, stories, and situations are the property of Time Warner. No infringement is intended. We will see you for the next episode of CW's Arrow.